Blog Talk Radio.
Tune into the higher inner frequency of Soul Class number 400 in search of ancient authentic Torah, program number 101. We're alive because we want to stay alive in Torah Chesed, instructions of kindness, Torah Chaim, instructions of life, Torah Rachman, instructions of mercy. We're broadcasting right now at 10:32, live from Turtle Island, a.k.a. the USA, Unifying Souls. Actually, program content will focus on the following topics. Number one, we'll be reading from Genesis chapter 5, verse 3, quote, "And Adam lived 130 years, and he gave birth or begot in his likeness after his image, and he named him Seth." Of course, we know that his wife Eve, Chava, gave birth, but this is the language that is used in the Torah, the scripture. Subject number two, Proverbs, verse 1, I should say chapter 1, verse 21. "She calls at the head of the noisy streets. She utters her words at the entrances of the gates in the city." Subject number three, teachings from Rambam. Subject four, Chabad and Brez of Chassidus. Subject number five, teachings relating to the seven Noahide commandments as well. We won't be surprised when other points of discussion manifest when human beings, all blessed with a divine image, get together live on the radio. Our call-in number is 347-838-8669. Meanwhile, may the Eternal Creator bless and protect you and your loved ones peacefully and pleasantly. Joining me right now, live, is one of our co-hosts, Dennis Ryan, teacher, student, and disseminator of the teachings of Rabbi Moshe Ben Maimon, Maimonides, otherwise known as the Rambam, Hanesher Gadol, the Great Eagle. Good morning, Dennis, and thank you for joining our program today.
Boker Tov, Don, glad to be here.
I'm glad you're here to be with us as well. Also, I just want to mention, Blessings, we opened the show because we got to give credit where credit is due. We opened up the program from the Generation Redemption CD, which was put out several years ago by my good friend, brother in prayer and spirit. And his name is Rev Isaac Baton. And I just want to know, I'm just giving you a little secret here, Blessings, more good music with the help of the Most High is coming down the pipeline to reach into your blessed mind and your blessed heart, all configured to your divine image, your Tzelem Elokim, which is no dream, that was called Here Comes the Time. And also, hopefully, in the midway section of our program, we'll be fusing together lyrics from a future composition, which Rabbi Isaac has given me permission to share with you. And the song will be called Let Us Be Good. In fact, a portion of this song was actually sung at my son's bar mitzvah, Yosef Yitzhak Goodman, on, well, it was about almost 14 months ago. So those of you who were there, I know Dennis was there. He might recognize some of the verses. And for most of you who weren't there, well, here's a chance to hear it for the first time. And hopefully when it comes into a recordable form, music and lyrics, we'll be very happy to share it with you. And we hope to fuse it together with a song by Rabbi Eliezer Brody, who's not only an excellent speaker and a wonderful human being, he's also a composer of music, a player of the flute. He composed a song called Nishmat, which refers to the idea of the soul. In ancient Hebrew meditation, we'll be fusing together Rabbi Isaac's lyrics with Rabbi Areb Eliezer Brody's music. With that being said, blessings, we're now going to go into the beginning of our program. We like to start usually with a letter from the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and I think we're going to start moving in a more methodical way of presenting the Rebbe's letters, meaning concerning now one primary theme for the next, it could be the next several months, it could be for the next couple of years, we'll see how it goes, and that's the idea of dealing with various mental health issues, blessed souls, because all of us are seeking to stay and maintain, hopefully get strengthened in a sense of consciousness, which we can call stability, to be sure of ourselves. Of course, the underlying empowerment for this type of consciousness is to believe in the Creator and to know that Creator is running the world. Therefore, we should feel very much self-assured. But unfortunately, many people in the world, unfortunately, just too many, have not been given the proper education from the perspective, unfortunately, of their own family environment, or perhaps they've experienced a traumatic event outside of their family environment, in their general community, among their friends, or sometimes in their school setting, or sometimes just during the daily pace of regular life, something can happen that can turn a person and sort of cause him or her to disconnect to what their purpose in life is, and part of getting disconnected to our purpose in life is being set off kilter by certain feelings of persecution. So in this brief letter, I'm going to read this response that the Rebbe gave to this person. I don't have the date of the letter. You can see it in the original, for those of you who can access the Hebrew, the Igros Kodesh, the Holy Letters of the Rebbe, volume 11, page 162. And this is a very brief piece of advice given by the Rebbe to this particular person. And then, of course, I'm looking forward to hear what Dennis has to say about this. And again, if anyone wants to call in to offer their perspectives, the call in number is 347-838-8669. And here goes the letter. You write that there are those who are hostile to you and your activities. And the Rebbe then advises, be unmindful and inattentive to all this. For surely a large part of this hostility and antagonism exists only in your imagination. The remaining part can be nullified by causing a reciprocal love within your antagonist, as the verse states, as water reflects the face, so does the heart reflect the other. And that's a quote, before we go back to the rest of the letter, for those of you who want to learn more about that quote, the source of that, let me just pull it down here. That was from the book of Proverbs, chapter 27, verse 20. So when a person takes and internalizes this idea, as water reflects the face, so does one heart reflect the other, the Rebbe encourages this person to know that, quote unquote, you can do this. Meaning, as the Rebbe concludes, you, whoever you are, and I speak now to any of you who might be feeling and struggling with feelings of persecution, you can bring about a reciprocal feeling within your antagonist by improving your relationship and treating that person in a more kindly manner. So Dennis, there's several points of focus here in this letter that the Rebbe has advised this person. Point number one is that perhaps the person who feels persecuted, part of that antagonism is coming from his or her imagination. The second thing is to remember, as an axiomatic teaching from Scripture, this is the prophetical scripture in Proverbs, as water reflects the face, so does one heart reflect the other. And the third point is to improve the situation, try to treat that person who you feel is antagonizing or causing you to feel feelings of persecution. If you treat that person in a more kindly manner, don't be surprised if they start to treat you nicer as well. Dennis, your take on these matters.
Yes, tolerance and humility is the hot stone of human behavior. If we forget about it and just go with our imagination, sometimes we can take the wrong track. But we must be benign to other humans. Why? Because they're not perfect. Some are not normal. But that doesn't mean that you can mistreat them or they should even mistreat you. So the whole thing is brought about by your example of how you interact and treat other people, because that's the inner you coming out with the other humans that are you come in contact with. So we must be careful, because you don't want people to treat you the way you treat them if you think there's something wrong with them. Nobody is perfect. With a little tolerance, we can have more understanding, and with more understanding, we can have a peaceful relationship.
True. And I want to point out something to you, Blessed Souls. I'd like to share with you something, Blessed Souls, that there is a type of therapeutic approach when, whether one is feeling persecuted by others, when he or she are in the presence of others, or perhaps a person is feeling anxiety, say in the comfort of his or her own environment, their house, their apartment, their cottage, or even if they're out on the beach or out in a park sitting on a bench and suddenly they feel negative feelings. So this practice or technique is called grounding. What does that mean? Meaning at the point where you feel some sort of anxiety or feelings of persecution coming from a person, it could even come from persons, it could be seeing a dog that's vicious, whatever it may be, or any other matter that is occupying your mind, is to take note what else is going on in your environment. So let's say you're sitting in your apartment or your house, or you're out in the street and something bothers you, whatever it may be. Start to count all the different things that your eyes can see. Like, for instance, in my apartment, I have the computer in front of me, I have the speakers, I have my telephone, I have a large mirror that reflects back to anyone who wants to see how they look, I have a rocking meditation chair, I have a couple of collections of plants, and I have a nice plush chair by our front table with a pillow on it, I have a collection of books, I have some pictures, I have a blessing for the house, I have a sofa. So when I start to think about all those different things, my mind is distracted from those feelings that are bothering me. And helping me in that process as well is just the physical sensation of pressing my feet on the ground. Now, let's say you don't have the luxury of sitting on a seat. You can merely just hold your hands together and squeeze them together, or to massage them together, or maybe massage your face. That as you're cognitively recognizing different things in your immediate environment, you also should try to physically stimulate either your legs by pressing on them, or rubbing your hands together, or rubbing your forehead, or maybe if you have a beard, stroking your beard, or flexing your muscles. So there's a two-pronged attack to distract you from things that are bothering you. And I would not be surprised if you make this as part of your battle plan against anxiety, or in the case of this letter that the Rebbe tried to address, feelings of persecution from other people. Don't be surprised if those feelings are diminished, and don't be surprised that one day you'll have the merit to share with other people how you conquered this feeling or feelings or sense of persecution from others. Dennis, would you like to any feedback on you on this matter?
To me, your plan is wonderful, and if you do have a plan, that's your defense against people who have a lot of hatred, and they're looking to see how much hatred you have so we can continue the argument. So what happens, or what should be, is from tolerance and humility, there's one thing that all humans can do. It sort of takes the fangs out of the bite. The bite is still there. It's just not fang-oriented anymore. And that is a smile. A smile is something that you can use, not laugh, not be sarcastic, but just a smile disarms people to a certain extent. Believe it or not, it also works on animals. And why would an animal know that a human is smiling? Why? Because they look peaceful, calm, and they're not threatening, and there's no hatred involved. So a simple smile can go a long way with other humans.
True. And I know, unfortunately, you can't join us today, Dennis. Ron Williams, our Ben Noah activist, has told me on more than one occasion. Now Ron is an expert in a type of martial arts called, I think it's called Aikido, excuse me if I'm pronouncing it wrong, that the whole idea of this is it's a martial art of not attacking, but using the negative energy of another person against themselves. Meaning, if a person comes to attack you, and they're flaying their arm at you, or they look like they're going to kick you, so if you're adept enough in this type of martial art, you merely redirect the arm in a direction that will, or the leg that's raising up to kick you, and you will redirect it in a way that the momentum of their own negative energy will drive them to the ground or drive them into a position where they are compromised and they can no longer attack you. So Ron learned from that a very interesting approach, a positive type of Aikido or Aikido, excuse me if I don't remember the name of this martial art as it should be pronounced, that by being positive with people, your positive energy helps draw out their positive energy, and therefore you avoid conflict or unnecessary tension between yourself and other people. Dennis, your take on this type of, this hopefully will be the type of martial art openly practiced by all the people during the Messianic Redemptive Era.
Well, I believe that all humans are good way down, but how can we bring out that? We bring it out by showing that we're positive people. And if you're positive enough, the positive energy, the positive feelings of other people will come out because you're not giving them a reason to come out with negative feelings. So the more positive you can be, smile, disarming, it's going to make these people think twice before they get angry and have to show their hatred, or they think that they have something personally against you. By saying hi with a big smile is not an aggressive function at all. But we don't greet a lot of people when we pass them in the streets, in the subways or buses. For some reason or another, a lot of humans like to look straight ahead and not see what they're looking at. Or there's other people who concentrate on the ground, and they don't want to see other people. Well,
right.
The other people are there. We don't live on an island, even though you could call it Turtle Island. But the people all need interaction, and we need to release the positive energy in you and other people.
True. Thank you, Dennis. I just want to point out, bless those, you might ask, why is Don pulling this place, which we normally associate with the USA or America, North America, as Turtle Island? Well, we see in the Bible itself, the Torah, that the land of Israel, before it was identified as the land of Israel, it was identified as the land of Canaan. And therefore, in paying respect to the Native American Indians peoples who lived before the Europeans came, and I guess when Columbus came into the West, into the Caribbean, I don't think he ever made it to the mainland of America. I think that was America Vespucci, whatever, that they called this landmass that most of us are living on, those of us listening in the USA to this live broadcast or eventually the archive version, they called it Turtle Island. I want to share with you something, and I'm sure Dennis is also going to sink his teeth into this type of reasoning, and he might even bring out some matters from Rambam before we get to hear from Dennis share with us some teachings from Rambam today. And I'm plucking this out of a little weekly publication. It's number 523. It's called Geula, G-E-U-L-A-H, which literally means redemption. And it talks about the idea of living an active lifestyle. So let's look what this piece of writing has to say, And I'm looking forward to see what Dennis has to say about this as well. And again, blessed souls, you do have the option of calling in. We still have plenty of time. The call-in number is 347-838-8669. And here we go. And by the way, I just want to send out a big shout-out to some of the people who have been offering a lot of support in my efforts. Thomas Eason of Arkansas, Rebecca Vanderworth of North Carolina, Julia Taylor, of Texas, Charles Gruber of Texas, Mordechai Sontag of California, and also good vibes from Brother John Matafeo all the way out, I think, in Wales or New Zealand. Anyway, going further, this article is called Get Moving. And this relates to the idea that captivity, unhealthy captivity, as if to say there's a healthy type of captivity, is known as a disease of captivity based on the following teaching that this person wrote about. It has been observed that killer whales, you know, orca, that are confined in tanks, in aquariums, develop floppy dorsal fins. But this is the causative factor here is not because those particular killer whales are genetically defective, but because they are not using them to swim hundreds of miles per day. And this type of impairment has been readily observed from various species of animals as a result of their confinement in zoos and nature centers. Now, Katie Bowman, who is listed here as possessing an MS, I'm assuming this would probably be a master in science, wrote in a book called Move Your DNA, which I think I'm going to try somehow to Google up, maybe without a vowel, maybe even buy it. Sounds very interesting. Published a book recently that presents a radical hypothesis that movement, literally simple old good old body movement, is a necessary nutriment for the body just like food. Using a wide range of scientific studies, Ms. Bowman, I guess now we understand she's a master of science because she's listed as a biochemist, explains that our bodies were designed for movement, and the overly sedentary modern lifestyles has led to the proliferation of human, quote-unquote, diseases of captivity that she describes as chronic pain, arthritis, and hypertension. For some, the answer has been to implement a strenuous exercise regimen. But Ms. Bowman, I guess this is a radical point here, points out that short bursts of intensive exercise may in fact be counterproductive because exercisers are still spending the vast majority of their waking hours in sedentary activities such as working at a desk, watching TV. So she wants us to understand that exercise is more like actually a vitamin pill for the body, an artificial way of providing it with the nutrients that should be really be supplied by a diet. However, Ms. Bowman, that's what the implication is that we should look at the exercises like a vitamin pill based on the normally perceived viewpoint that we should get involved in strenuous exercise. Now, I myself do. I'm not going to stop. But instead, Ms. Bowman recommends various ways to incorporate more movement into our daily routine, such as walking to work or to shop, paring down furniture, and improving posture. In this way, we give our body the regular movement nutrients it needs rather than relying on exercise regimen as a quick fix, which is a pretty radical idea. And we'll conclude with this little piece here, and then I'll ask Dennis to chime in. Any movement in a positive direction, small as it may be, generates more positive energy in its wake. Indolence and apathy likewise feed off each other. As it says in the Torah, if you forsake me for one day, I will forsake you for two, says God. Now this is not to imply or openly promote the idea that Creator is being vindictive, that the verse is simply testifying on the fact of nature that inertia is hard to overcome. And once we neglect study of teachings, which we have a tradition, are divine for one day, it becomes more difficult to resume it later. And I can just tell you about those myself, that to me, a day without Torah, whether it be oral, written Torah traditions, I have found, in fact, it can actually cause a sluggishness, as opposed to when I get excited by a teaching to the point where I want to study it in a more analytical way, and also be humbled by the fact that I don't have the whole picture of this. It inspires me to want to open up the book or to talk with teachers or students or peers on this matter, which is at that particular point in time, is energizing me with a type of enthusiasm, excitement that we talked about last week in Proverbs chapter 1, verse 20. So Dennis, yes, I've bitten off and I've chewed off a lot. I'm sure you've digested it, and any feedback you'd like to offer, I'm more than happy to hear what you have to say about these matters.
Freedom comes in two parts, mental and physical. If you cannot exercise your mind or feel like you can exercise it, well, then you're going to feel inhibited in some way. So it isn't the bars on the windows that bothers the prisoners. It's the inactivity of the mind. Mm-hmm. So we also have the freedom of the body. The body was designed to be used. We live in a technological world where people have apps that rather than go out and buy something, whether you're going to walk or take a car and then walk out of the parking lot and walk back, we will deliver it to your front door. So the only walking you have to do is from one room to the other. So we even have people today, due to the technological world of, let's say, media even, where they sit down and watch an exercise program. And at the end of it, they say to anybody around them, boy, I started sweating just watching them do what they're doing on TV. Well, that's very nice. And that's what we call, in psychological terms, displacement. You're displacing what you should be doing with what other people are doing. So what happens is the body was meant to be used. We have radiuses to our fingers, our hands, most of our bones have radiuses to them. That's to handle the motion, and that's why muscles are attached to the bones. It was designed to be used. Now, you cannot go out and have a vigorous physical exercise every day, but you must be mindful to keep your body in condition. Now, how you want to do it, that's your business. It's personal. Some people will walk and say, gee, I walked 2 miles today. Maybe I'll add a couple of more blocks each day. Other people will go out and swim. And it's very important, swimming and walking, because you're using a whole bunch of muscles at one time just by doing that type of exercise. So that's an efficient type of exercise as opposed to going out and going to a gym and lifting weights so that one muscle in your shoulder is being exercised. That's for weightlifters and professional other people who do the gyms. But you must be mindful that you have to exercise your body. How you do it is up to you. But if you don't, then you're not really honoring your body. It was given to you by God, and it's in your care.
True. And Dennis, I'd like to get your take on this too as well, in terms of spiritual nourishment, which can be provided by scripture, and for people of other faiths, they'll turn to their other scriptural texts. But of course, we're in the context of biblical scripture, that no one is going to promote the idea, unless a person is privy to the blessing that, for instance, they can take a week, a month, or a year off, or a couple years off to learn in, say, a place of study. So we suggest to individuals, Dennis, to try a page a day, or if you don't have the time, a half a page a day, as opposed to, you know, an all or nothing type of almost like a type of manic approach to spirituality. It's very unhealthy. Rabbi Nachman, in fact, gives very strong advice. It is better to learn a little every day to get that spiritual nutrition, hazana l'neshama, you know, sustenance for the soul, which also gives sustenance to the body. But when you learn these matters, but so because if you feel more perky and you feel more excited and more enthusiastic about the blessed life you've been given, certainly that has a physical effect in terms of the chemical reactions in your brain, which sends messages all over your body that, hey, this is not bad, this life. But a little bit at a time is much healthier than a lot, unless, again, as I just mentioned before, you have been blessed to take a retreat into learning into matters of spirituality and also matters of practical conduct, as we would almost suggest, blessed is those that the Torah offers practical instruction how to live a practical life, even in the most mundane matters, as a means of giving testimony to God is here, there, and everywhere. Dennis, your take on this matter.
Yes, all humans have a certain amount of spiritual energy. It becomes a question, are you sitting on it or using it? Or are you half in between? Or do you believe I only should do it once a week? No, what happens is your mind doesn't stop. It's always working. You must measure your spiritual energy from time to time. If it gets too low, it means you're emphasizing the human side of the world here. And that doesn't answer everything. The spiritual world and the spiritual energy that comes by just thinking about it. Now, you can read a page in the Bible or a half page, a page in the Torah. It doesn't make any difference. However, there are some people that say, well, I'm going to save 5 or 10 minutes a day to do some praying. Well, praying isn't a bad idea. So we have many different ways between praying and reading scripture that you can increase your spiritual energy. But you'll never increase it if you don't use it.
True. And not only I would say that prayer is an excellent idea how to occupy one's time, because we're taking the living energy that we've been given, that soulful energy, that soulful vitality, that soulful power, and return some of it back to the Creator instead of chasing our own needs, which there's nothing wrong with taking care of your needs. You must take care of your own needs, because no one wants to be a living example of, you know, someone who's served, unless a person is a king, because that being served like that could cause a person to experience what is known as a concept in the oral Torah tradition as the bread of shame. A person likes to feel like they've accomplished something. So whatever you decide to accomplish in this world, blessed souls, in your 120 years, and only until you live out your X amount of years, you realize what is that 120-year equation, how does that apply to you? It's not only literal, it's also allegorical. So with that being said, we're going to learn now, blessed souls, from the book of Genesis, chapter 5, verse 3, about a human being who lived more than 120 years. He actually lived 930 years. But the verse here in chapter 5, verse 3 reads as follows, and then we're going to accentuate it with some oral Torah tradition. And, of course, we'll turn to Dennis for some comments, questions, or concerns, or things he would like to elaborate upon. So it reads like this. Adam lived, we're talking about original noun, original man, blessed souls, he lived 130 years, and he begot, or he had a son in his likeness and form, and he named him Seth. Now, one of the things that is brought out from this teaching, from the oral Torah tradition, is that after that original sin, there was a separation between Adam and Eve by choice of Adam, who is very saddened by the fact that he and Eve had been thrown out of the Garden of Eden because of their misdoing there. Now, we do know that Adam was born on a Friday. Now, when was one of Adam's sons killed? That would have been Abel. Abel was killed when he was only 50 days old, because in the beginning of the history of the human family experience, blessed souls, that at least from the original human beings, when Adam and Eve were born, they didn't grow up to have children. They were already formed to approximate what we understand to be a person of 20 years old. And therefore, their children, it doesn't say how old they were when they were born, but obviously the fact that Abel was already a shepherd and Cain was already, he was a farmer, and there was a conflict over, basically because Cain was jealous over Abel's offerings to the Most High, and then the conflict took out and Cain killed him. But we don't know exactly what age they were born at, as we would understand how mature they were in their development. We know today that a baby born today is basically defenseless and must be nurtured, and we all understand what that implies. So Adam at 130 years old, gave birth to Seth. Now, the Lubavitcher Rebbe brings out a very interesting point that Adam's being identified as being 130 years old at this point is the first time we see some sort of chronological listing as to the age of a human being. So already we realize that Adam lived beyond 120 years. We'll learn in a couple more verses how many more years he lived after Seth was born. So the Rebbe comes up with this insight that it is important to note that the numbers of years given in these lists of these early human beings are approximate, in that a person can be considered to have lived X number of years, even as much as 6 months short of his birthday. So it could have been that in actuality, when the Torah lists that Adam was 130 when he gave birth to Seth, he was actually, say, 129 years and 6 months. But that is considered to be towards his 130th year. So when the Torah says that so-and-so was X years old and he had a son, like in this instance, Adam was 130 years when he gave birth to Seth, he could have been as young as 129 years and 6 months. He could have been 130 years and 2 months, or 130 years and 3 days. So the possibility is that the child could have been born any time during a span of 18 months, meaning from the 6 months before, say, Adam's 130th birthday, or for the next 12 months until he reached his 131st birthday. Now, what do we learn out from it? I personally, blessed souls, cannot derive anything out that is of specific usage in terms of how to implement it into my daily service to the Creator and fellowshipping with human beings. However, that such a Torah sage scholar as the Rebbe brought that out to us, I would say that eventually this teaching will be expounded upon more by some teacher who is of great wisdom of Torah, aside from the Lubavitcher Rebbe, or it might take even up to the point of the Messiah himself to explain what is the significance of us understanding that when we see, and as we'll see in the various verses to come, that when a person is identified as 130 years old and he gave birth to a son like Seth, and later he would live for another 800 years, Adam would, it could have been when he passed away at 930, he could have been 929 days and 6 months. 929 years and 6 months, he could have been 930 years, and 3 days. It doesn't imply that Adam lived exactly 930 years. Dennis, any take on these matters?
Yes, one of the first things you said was a little strange in English, Don, but I know what you meant. And you said, when he was born, we didn't know what age he was. But the word born in English means you're starting. You
right.
came out of your mother. You're beginning. So you couldn't have aged inside your mother because the gestation period is set for 9 months for humans, as we believe. So
right.
anyway, it just sounded funny in English, that's all. But
well,
I'm sorry, I
hear what you're saying before you go on further. I just want to say that again, we have to, it's for us to. I think the teaching is helping us, these teachings are trying to help us recognize that early human beings had a different way of coming into, they came obviously from the mother's place of procreation, but until a certain point, at which I still haven't learned it. When did it happen? When was the first child born that he was as helpless as a modern child is born today? It's not clear. This is conjecture. I have no source what I'm saying. Unless that Cain and Abel were born helpless, and in the matter of, say, like 20 days, they matured quicker. I don't know, Dennis. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I'm just saying.
Nobody knows, Don. I don't know. You don't know. But we're trying to put it in a framework to help us to understand. But the most important thing about aging is, whether you're on the planet for 20 years or 200 years, would you live a worthy life that you would be proud of, and that God would be proud of you for the time you put in on Earth? How many years do you need to do good? We've had people, especially, we'll take creative people, artists, oh, they went through their blue period, their red period, their so-and-so period. We
right.
have some prophets even that were friendly, kind people, and then they became murderous type of people, or vice versa.
Yep.
So we have this ambience that humans swing back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
But the question is, for every listener, is how much time do you need to be a good person that you can be proud of, and God could be proud of you? So even though these people who originally inhabited the earth lived longer than us, the question is, can you accomplish as much or more than they did? Or are you going to be in the group that did less because you said you had a shorter life?
True. And who's to say, you know, the question is, Dennis, we don't know. You know, one time someone came, you know, the Rebbe was accustomed to giving out dollars to give to encourage people to give charity. And someone did, within the Jewish outreach movement, in the non-Lubavitch outreach movement, there's a term which the Rebbe disassociated the Lubavitch educational movement with, which is called Kiruv HaRachokim, which literally means to bring those who are far away closer. So the Rebbe told one rabbi, when he mentioned that term, Kiruv Rechokim, bringing close to those who are far away, meaning our fellow brothers and sisters of the Jewish faith, bringing them back to their Torah ancestral rites to be observant Jews of the Torah, the Rebbe said, we don't know who is closer or farther from Creator. And the Rebbe did not make it dependent on one's observance of learning Torah or doing commandments. So when we do good today, blessed souls, we should not feel pressured by the fact that we're not going to, most probably not have 500, 600, 700, 800, 900 years like the ancients did. We're going to live out our 120 years, whether it be literal or allegorical. However, in the moment that we're doing it, perhaps we're creating greater satisfaction to Creator. Perhaps, I can't say definitely, but perhaps we are coming closer to the Creator in our own diminished physical lives, which are much weaker than, say, the people of the early generations. We should not be surprised that perhaps we're causing greater satisfaction to the Creator. And therefore, to me, the most important value to take into one's approach to doing kindness and goodness of the world is Just focus on doing as much as you can. Don't run yourself ragged doing it. I don't advise anyone to do that. Build up your spiritual and physical and cognitive and emotional and faithful muscles and do it as much as you can. And in Creator's eyes and His heavenly court of judgment, when we live at 120 years, surely it will be clear to us that we didn't waste our time by investing our energies into doing good in this world. Dennis?
Well, I like the concept of the plan that you mentioned before, Don, but associated with that plan is taking inventory of ourselves.
True.
Are we doing good? Have we shown a track record? Do we believe in ourselves? Do we have confidence that we can go forward and do good? Have we been communicating with God on a regular basis, or have we forgotten Him along the way, but remember Him maybe one day a week? Anyhow, we have to take the inventory and say, can we do better? Are we doing better? It doesn't mean that we become zealots. It doesn't mean that we become extremists. But we're talking about the everyday simple things that we do in life, because that's what we are. And you have to make the best of what you have while you're here.
True. That being said, Bessels, we're now going to turn to one verse from Mishlei Proverbs, from chapter 1, verse 21, and we're going to be assisted and empowered by Rashi's elucidation on this verse. First, let's read the verse. She calls at the head of the noisy streets. She utters her words at the entrance of the gates in the city. Now, Bessels, we are not talking about a woman, although certainly there have been many righteous women who have called to the head of noisy streets and uttering her words at the entrance of gates in the city, who have caused individuals and even the masses to have a shift in consciousness towards the proper purpose of human life. However, here we are, again, remember, blessed souls, that this book, Proverbs, is speaking in the language of the Torah, using what is known as the Torah's Mashalim, the instructions of allegories, as a way to bring these matters closer to our understanding, concepts which otherwise might be elusive of our ability to internalize them and simply understand them. So the She here is referring to the Torah. Now you might say, how could Torah be expressed in a feminine term? Well, Blessed Souls, the actual spelling in the Hebrew of Torah is in a feminine form. When a word ends in a hey, that's with a feminine, not prefix, but how would we end it? The ending letter determines the whether it be in male gender or female gender. So Torah itself is in a female gender, because the Torah is not creator, heaven forbid. The Torah was created by the Creator as a form of instruction, and is to nourish us just as the mother nourishes her children. Just as Chava herself was also called Em Chochai, the mother of all living things, because from Mother Eve, Ima Chava, all of us human beings have been brought upon the face of the earth in the natural fashion, and the accepted fashion, which everyone regards as the only true way to bring a human being into this world, is through the agency of a mother and father blessed by the Creator to procreate. So Torah, as being alluded to as a she, Rashi elucidates where it says, she calls at the head of the noisy streets, in the place where she is heard. And there she calls out and makes the following statement, quote unquote, how long will you naive ones, etc.? Well, we're going to learn more about that next week, blessed souls, in verse 22. And at the entrance of the gates, they are the places where the elders sit, which seems to imply, I'm just using Torah reasoning, that elders can sit and be foolish, or elders can sit and be wise. And this is a matter of great debate of how wise are the elders. And one of the ways that we would like to humbly suggest is a litmus test for the wisdom of the elders. Are they willing to take the time to transmit their quote-unquote wisdom, knowledge, and understanding to the younger generations, that the younger generations will aspire to be students of wisdom, students of understanding, and students of knowledge? Dennis, your take on these matters.
Yes, whenever I hear of pronouns being used in Scripture, I always remind myself that pronoun control was never being practiced in the old days. Why? Because I believe he or she are interchangeable. They're really talking about humans. If they're talking about God, they wouldn't talk that way. But if it's talked about humans, you don't know if it's a he or a she, what they meant, and some people accidentally take that as, oh, you're bringing up a negative idea and it has to do with women. Well, that to me is a false understanding, because I don't believe that they had pronoun control in those days. I'm sorry, Don, but to me, it's all about humans. That's why we're here. That's why God put us here.
Well, I'm just going to refer back to verse 20, Dennis, with Rashi's elucidation again, where it says, wisdom showered in the street, in the squares, she. In fact, King Solomon was very forthcoming, saying that in the square she gives forth her voice, and Rashi elucidates, behold, the wisdoms of the Torah cry out in her streets to admonish the people to turn to them the street, to turn them, meaning the streets, meaning the masses of people, to turn to another form of street, the study halls, which we talked about last week, which were, you know, a study hall of Torah is not a placid library type of setting. It's a place of vibrant energy where there's discussion, agreement, as we are agreeing to disagree here at this point. But in this case, again, remember, this is a book of Proverbs, so there is a certain prophetic liberal position that King Solomon took in writing this. So therefore, also, I think as well, this is also an empowerment to a female, because unfortunately, many feminists who disavow Torah viewpoints, whether they be Jewish women or women of the nations, that they feel that the Torah is promoting a patriarchal, sexist, man-dominating society, when in fact a properly functioning society, whether it be within the Jewish nation or all the nations of the world, should be a patriarchal and matriarchal society, because true functionality in the majority of cases, where the children are truly functional, was the byproduct of a mother-father relationship, father-mother relationship, raising the children. And there are very, very many exceptions where people were not raised by their biological parents. They also came out to be very fine human beings. So that's just my take on that, agreeing to disagree with you on this matter.
Well, you proved my point to a certain extent, that it comes up, it's easy to talk about if it's underneath a human label. Because humans are male or female, she or he, but we're all humans. And what God said to a male, he also implies it to a female, and vice versa. So, therefore, it is God, it being the highest entity, humans are the lowest. But they're all in a row, and they're all human. They all have human properties.
True. That being said, blessed souls, and Dennis, we're going to take a brief musical break, and then after the musical break, we'll be treated to Dennis reading to us some wisdoms from Rambam, and also I'm going to be reading from the Mishnah Torah of Rambam. So here we're going to be taking a break with, this is called Nishmat, Ancient Hebrew Meditation at Sea, which is being performed by Laser Brody, and I hope to be meshing it together with the lyrics of Let Us Be Good by Isaac Bitton. So hold on, everyone, and enjoy. Let us be good. We can't be wrong and right. Cannot see dark as light. It's the duty of the heart to win that fight and just be good. Let us be good. Let us be. Let us be good. Let me be. Let us be good. Let it be. We all got to give the best we've got. Game of the fool to want to bully like a bull, but respect is our rule. We want to tell something good. Now it's up to you and me to make this world one big family, so we can all sing like Louis, referring to Louis Armstrong, Louis Armstrong. What a wonderful, wonderful world. Lend a hand. Glow a smile, let it shine for miles and miles. Love is made to reconcile. If you think good, it'll be good. Let us be good, let us be. Let us be good, let me be. Let us be good, let it be. We all got to give the best we've got. Reading from the words of the, which are superimposed on this video by Laser Brody, Rabbi Laser Brody. And here we go. I could not thank you sufficiently, O Creator of creation, even for one little blessing I have received. My soul shall forever shall call your name. My soul forever shall call your name. With Creator's loving grace. This was original Cherokee music, Here I Am from Great Father, composed and performed by Grandmother White Eagle. Okay, I thought it was from Rabbi Lazar Brody, but it was from Grandmother White Eagle. Okay, bless your souls. I hope you got some sort of enjoyment from hearing that. I hope I would. Dennis, were you able to hear me project over the music?
Yes, clearly, Don.
Thank you very much. So, Dennis, what would you like to share with us today from the teachings of the Nesher Gadol, the Great Eagle, Rambam Maimonides, Rabbi Moshe Ben Maimon, Rabbi Dr. Moshe Ben Maimon?
Well, from the Guide to Perplexed on page 412 of the online version, we have a very small paragraph, but it sort of accentuates what the Rambam has done with languages. He has compacted it so he uses words so efficiently that he doesn't have to explain the whole concept that would take up books and books and books.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to read from this very slowly because you have to listen to what is said and unsaid. One thing that the listeners should also understand is when he uses the word spheres, it's really planets. But in those days, they called the planets spheres, so no big deal. So, let me read. This must be our belief when we have a correct knowledge of our own self and comprehend the nature of everything. We must be content and not trouble our mind with seeking a certain final cause for things that have none or have no other final cause but their own existence, which depends on the will of God, or, if you prefer, the divine wisdom.
Beautiful. Dennis, can you read again that, because it is a short reading, can you read it over again? I think
sure.
Just as I repeated so much, I think it's important for our blessed listening ones to hear these words once again.
Because he brings in so many things into a simple sentence that it's hard to even comprehend the whole world that he's talking about. But we believe in what he's doing. So let me read it again. This must be our belief when we have a correct knowledge of our own self and comprehend the true nature of everything. We must be content and not trouble our mind with seeking a certain final cause for things that have none, or have no other final cause but their own existence, which depends on the will of God, or, if you prefer, on the divine wisdom.
Beautiful, Dennis. And I would suggest to anyone who just heard this wonderful prayer that they should consider reviewing, you know, when you heard it live, so you can't review it, basically, aside unless you jotted down what just read to you. However, what you can do is, in fact, listen to the archive version at your convenience, and you can slide back the bar that goes from left to right in order to repeat these words and maybe jot down, say, a sentence or two or maybe the entire reading and think about integrating that into your daily consciousness awakening, sort of like a spiritual form of a cup of coffee. So that's my reaction to Dennis's reading, and I want to thank you, Dennis, for reading that. Now, I would like to share with everyone now a teaching from the Hilchot Yesodia Torah, the laws of the foundation of the Torah, which Rambam penned himself, gleaning from all the oral and written tradition. And it's a very terse teaching, which, again, this needs a lot of reflection upon, and certainly we'll be turning to Dennis for some reflection upon, and we'll also be elucidating this teaching based on what I have in front of me, which is plucking from the Mishnah Torah, which is published by Moznayim Book Company here in Brooklyn, New York. And the law reads like this, blessed souls, is one of the foundations of the Torah. If a human being were to imagine that he, meaning creator, and I'm adding now in parentheses, does not exist, no other being could possibly exist. Meaning, we must place the fact, I'm going to learn it now in the positive, because we have an almighty, eternal, all-seeing, knowing creator who exists, therefore it is tangible and is relevant to promote the idea that in fact, we do in fact exist. Now, again, there's a subtlety here that's captured in the Hebrew writing of this teaching, which I'd like to elucidate upon to inform those who wouldn't catch this nuance, which is basically this, where the Rambam wrote, Im ya'ale ala dat, meaning, and it's translated as if one were to imagine, which can be understood from the Hebrew, the Lashon HaKodesh, is if one were to raise upon one's knowledge, which then allows for a different interpretation of this whole teaching as follows. Meaning, if you, or myself, or Dennis, anyone out there listening live or the future archive version, were to elevate his or her thinking and conceive of the Creator only in lofty, transcendent terms, without allowing for dimension of the divinity, which is an existence, and can therefore serve as a source of creation, then no other entity could exist. The fact of the matter is Creator, in Creator's mindset, which only is known unto the Creator himself, it is the willingness of Creator to lower Creator himself to the level of quote-unquote first existence that allows for the potential of the cause and effect relationships which exist in this creation that eventually we can say as human beings we exist. Now, I know there have been theological or philosophical conjecture over whether or not we truly exist. But the Torah, the Bible, testifies from the very first verse that who created the creation, subdividing into two categories, heaven and earth, Creator did. So therefore, we have an existence because we get potent testimony. The very first words that Moses was given to instruct all human beings, because this is something relevant to every human being, is that in the beginning, Creator created heaven and earth. Dennis?
Yes. We should not get too involved in the details. Not all answers are in the details. And the further you go into the details, does that make you any smarter? Sometimes yes, sometimes no. But we don't live for the details. We live for life. And sometimes life is not detailed at all. It comes, it goes. It is. We live in it. If you think you're in a dream and you're not living your life, then you're not using common sense. And common sense still works. You can go to the highest universities in the world, but if you don't have common sense, you haven't built on a worthwhile foundation. So don't be disturbed with the details. The answer is in you, not in the details that you're finding. You can be mindful of the details. They are there. They are part of the real world. But you are you, and other things are other things. And that's what common sense is all about, keeping track of where everything should be.
Okay. With that being said, I just want to mention that we, within the Jewish community, have a tradition that Torah does not mean Bible. Torah means basically two general terse depictions. Number one is it means instruction, and number two, it can mean law. Now, within that context, there are a lot of details, and there is a lot of place where the details are not truly clarified, and therefore, where the details have not been clarified, later scholars have come to clarify it. And yet still, even with that being said, There are matters which have not been clarified to the point from our oral Torah tradition. We're going to have to wait to the return of the prophets, specifically the prophet Elijah the prophet, who, despite the fact there have been so many great prophets who came before him, so many great prophets that came after him, we're going to need the clarification from Elijah the prophet, to saying, why do we have so many details, but yet there's a point of knowledge which we cannot access in order to know how to conduct ourselves properly in our daily lives in a particular case. And this is mentioned more than once in the Talmudic literature. So what is known as a teku, it's like, we'll just have to wait until that time when Elijah the prophet comes, and is it possible that there's a scenario that if we go to Elijah the prophet and he won't have the answer, well, then who can we turn to? Well, at that point, then we will probably, and I won't be surprised, we'll be turning to the Messiah, the Mashiach himself, the one who is anointed to lead the human family experience into the next level of human consciousness, which is a time of no more hatred, no more jealousy, no more unnecessary competition. We'll have to wait to that time. So that's my reaction to Dennis. You can read into it as much as you want, blessed souls. If you want to, you can just, you know, we're giving two perspectives. We're trying to share with you out there, blessed souls, that there's many ways to skin the fish of consciousness.
Let me bridge the gap of our two positions here, Don. And
yeah.
That is, while we're waiting for the answers, we can love God as much as we want to.
That's
why?
Right.
Because he wants you, and you're not going to give him details.
Turning forward, we're going to now be sharing some teachings from Rabbi Nachman. Actually, one specific teaching. And one of the teachings of Rabbi Nachman is Rabbi Nachman advocates for human beings to pray, which Dennis talked about briefly earlier in the program, and I said it's a certainly great idea. Rabbi Nachman advocated that people should pray for bounty. We need to see. Now, there's plenty of bounty in the world as it is right now, blessed souls. Unfortunately, the actions, the desires, and I would say the distorted consciousness of too many human beings creates an imbalance of bounty, that while there are some who live on the good and plenty, the last figures I saw was that as you and I are sitting comfortably in our chairs or wherever we are, or you're walking in the street with your iPad, if you're listening to the show via the iPad, or you're listening to in the future on the archive version, that we have plenty of liquid to hydrate ourselves with. By other parts of the world, there's 1 billion people, 1/7 of the human family experience, which is going without sufficient water. In fact, I believe in a certain part of Southern California, as we speak this very day, I read this article a couple of weeks ago, I haven't heard of any change yet, some of these places in Southern California where there's been such a horrible drought that people are going 6 months plus now without having water for their sink, and the travails they have to go to just to get that precious substance of water. And there's water rationing over there in Southern California. And there's real concerns about what the crop yields will be for the coming year. So therefore, we pray for proper bounties, for proper bountiful levels of water. We also pray that the hearts and minds of the captains or the captains or engineers of business in this continent shall come together either on their own accord or in working with other corporate engineers or captains to create more opportunity for many people who have been displaced by the past economic and business decisions of the last, say, 35 years. Because I certainly do remember a United States of America where there was more bounty for more people. Now, specifically now, Rabbi Nachman had composed a prayer for peace. Now, I'm only going to read this prayer once, blessed souls, but what I probably will do is, without a vow, I will probably copy and paste it onto my Blog Talk Radio wall page and on my Facebook account, and I'm going to try to share it with a lot of people, and I hope once you hear this prayer, perhaps you'll want to share it with other people too. In fact, I'll read it slow enough that if you're listening in, you can say it along with me. It's a wonderful prayer, and this is attributed to Rabbi Nachman ben Feige. His mother's name was Feige of Breslov. Rabbi Nachman lived, it says here, 1773. I thought he lived from 772 until he went to the next level of life in 1810. So here comes the prayer of Rabbi Nachman for today's presentation of Breslov Chassidus. I'm going to read it very slowly. So if you want, you can read it along with me. Master of peace, divine ruler, to whom peace belongs. Master of peace, creator of all things, may it be thy will to put an end to war and bloodshed on earth and to spread a great and wonderful peace over the whole world, so that nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war any more. Help us and save us all. And let us cling tightly to the virtue of peace. Let there be a truly great peace between every person and their fellow, and between husband and wife. And let there be no discord between people, even in their hearts. Let us never shame any person on earth, great or small. May it be granted unto us to fulfill your commandment to, quote, love your neighbor as yourself, end of quote, with all our hearts and souls and bodies and possessions. And let it come to pass in our time, as it is written, quote, and I will give peace in the land, and you shall lie down, and none shall make you afraid. I will drive the wild beasts from the land, and neither shall the sword go through your land. Creator, who is peace, bless us with peace. Dennis, any take on Rabbi Nachman's prayer for peace?
No, that's easily a qualified piece of prayer for peace, to invoke what God, or hopefully to invoke what God wants. And that is, why can't we have peace on the planet here? I mean, spiritually, there's peace. But when humans get involved, we come up with reasons not to have peace. But that was a good saying. I mean, a good prayer. I also like how he included some of those things in the tablets that were given to Moses that he brought down from the mountain. So peace is something we always try to strive for. It is not easy. It is hard. And there's so many humans who want to come up with diverse reasons for peace, against peace, that we have a hard time even controlling them. Why? Because we do have a free will. But unless our free will is geared and centered on peace, we will never have it.
True. Blessed souls, Dennis. Dennis and blessed souls. I like now to share a piece, a small piece, and something really to digest as well. A teaching from the Lubavitch Rebbe that he delivered. Again, this is called a Maimar, a Hasidic discourse. I happen to have the merit to be there. I think this is probably the only time I was standing before the Rebbe when he delivered this type of Torah, which is considered to be the within the Hasidic movement, the highest level, the holiest level of teachings, a teaching of Hasidus in the form, which again is called a Maimar, a statement. And it's this teaching is based upon a prophetic teaching going back thousands of years, and the purpose of the Hasidic Mimer is to flesh out, bring out into human consciousness things, the spiritual energies which are embedded in this prophetic teaching, in order that we can get a better understanding of what Creator is trying to communicate to us. Because a prophet does not say something of his own, blessed souls. He or she, and I mentioned she as well, there have been many female prophets as well, he or she have purified them, him or herself, or him or herself, to the point where they become a human loudspeaker for Creator's wisdom to be channeled to us human beings. We're not on that prophetic level yet. So the prophecy that the Rebbe began this teaching from, that he wanted to expound upon, is coming from the book of Isaiah, chapter 57, verse 19. And I give you the source there that I hope you'll be blessed and inspired enough to go look it up yourself, blessed souls. And it goes like this. The prophecy goes like this. Or the prophet is telling us what the Creator is trying to instruct us. Quote, unquote, I will create fruit of the lips, peace, peace to the far and to the near, end of quote, says God. Quote, I will heal him, which also infers her as well. Now, as we mentioned earlier, that the Lubavitcher Rebbe told a rabbi, said that who are to know who is close and who is far from Creator? Well, in this prophetical teaching, the Creator indicates that there is a close and near to him, but that's in the realm of Creator's knowledge and not for us to speculate upon. So that's not the point that the Rebbe was bringing out there, but that's just something I want to share with you. Creator knows who's close or who's far and who's near to him, to Creator. So leave that to the realm of the Creator to decide who is close and who is far. And let's think about, in our terms, of how can we all get closer together. Now, going into the Rebbe's elucidation upon this prophetic teaching, he encouraged us, when we analyze this verse, that there was another maimar, there was another discourse that was delivered, not by him, because 50 years from this point, when he delivered this Hasidic discourse, it was 1987. So we were saying that if we were to look back at this Hasidic teaching when it was recited by another Rebbe, meaning his father-in-law, the sixth Lubavitcher Rebbe, which was delivered at that point on the 13th of Tishrei, 1937. I don't know how it corresponds to the English calendar day, but that's basically 2 days before the festival of the Tabernacles of Sukkot. The Rebbe wants us to know that his father-in-law elucidated what is implied by the prophetic teaching, quote-unquote, the fruit of the lips. And the previous Rebbe was mentioning that this is referring to a type of speech which comes out spontaneously, expresses itself automatically. The implications in a parenthetical thought of the allegory of the fruit of the lips is that the fruit, what is the fruit that comes out of our mouth? It is the speech which comes from the lips themselves, meaning the speech which is not motivated by thought or specific purpose, but rather comes as an expression of spontaneity. So the Rebbe asked the question, what is the advantage of such spontaneous speech? So the first thing that can come to mind, blessed souls, is that in the verse it says, I will create fruit of the lips. Now this is not talking about human being creating fruit of the lips. That Creator is going to create the fruit of the lips. And the expression for create is bara, meaning we're talking about some sort of divine godly experience where Creator can empower human beings to bring forth a wisdom way beyond his or her previous circumstances or previous levels of consciousness. And also, and then I'll turn to Dennis for some feedback, the idea of create is referring to a type of divine creative process which is accepted by many people of the world and rejected by many people of the world, but I am one who accepts it. I think Dennis also accepts this idea that the idea, the expression of the word of creating, the fruit of the lips, the expression of create, is referring to the expression of ex nihilo, yesh ma'ayin, that the creator can bring out of nothingness a type of communication through a human being to share with another human being a very profound wisdom that he or she can internalize and bring it into their lifestyles and share it with other people. Ultimately, this is alluding back to the source of all ex nihilo, as that God, creator, created everything out of nothingness. And so if creator created everything out of nothingness, we shouldn't be surprised that the fruit of our lips, which are basically expressing wisdoms, which are way beyond our current existential level of wisdom, if we are worthy of it, are basically, this is also alluding to prophecy, because prophecy is basically that, something coming out of nothing. Because again, the prophet does not adulterate the prophecy. He or she is merely transmitting that to other human beings. Dennis, your take on these matters.
Yes, Don. All human prophets are speaking words that do not originate or emanate from other humans. These, we believe these people were endowed with words that you call fruit, but since it comes from a spiritual world, it's something that's sweet, delicious, and good. But it's devoid of the human who's communicating this. So the spiritual world will use certain humans for communication. But that communication is somewhat sacred. It doesn't come directly from God, but it emanates from God. So therefore, we're very stupid if we don't pay attention to it, and we're not using common sense if we ignore it. Why? Because it has greater value than the language that the humans are using, because it's pointing out higher level spiritual things. So if you can understand that, then when you hear it, you will give it a different meaning other than it came from a neighbor next door or somebody you heard on a subway, bus, or train, or plane. So we have to distinguish between those things that were said as messages through the spiritual world as opposed to things that just emanate on a human level.
True, true. Now we're going to we're going to turn to a brief teaching from the seven Noahide commandments. I'm just getting together. I want to be able to turn to our segue song by David Dohm, as where I had it and I lost it. And let me just see if you just bear with me, blessed souls, and then we're going to turn to this Noahide teaching. Let's see here. I think we're going to have it here. Hold on, please. Bum ba dum bum bum. We would normally say we'll pause for station identification, but no. Okay, we've got the song queued up. Now, blessed souls, one of these seven commandments which are incumbent upon all human beings is the idea of avoiding worshiping something other than Creator, which is the negative commandment to avoid worshiping idols. Now, we've talked about these concepts on prior shows, but again, I'd like to go through this because idolatry, when described in Hebrew, means avodah zarah, which literally means a service which is strange to the human being's experience, meaning it should not be part of the norm that people want to worship something other than Creator. But unfortunately, people have fallen into this trap, and therefore we want to encourage people to get out of this trap. Now, at the same time, too, in no shape, way, or form are we going to advocate our own entering into the homes of others or other places of worship to destroy those idols, because that's something that those people who are worshiping the idols must do of themselves. selves. In fact, one of the very interesting teachings of the Seven High Commandments that I've seen is that invading a country based on quote-unquote religious superiority as self-perceived by that nation attacking another nation is strictly forbidden according to the Seven High Commandments as all forms of offensive wars. Now, if a country comes to violate the definition of an offensive war, another country is certainly empowered by the Torah to defend themselves, to fight a defensive war. Okay, that's a topic for another day, and we're not going to go further than that, but I just want to read briefly, and we're just going to read little snippets, and we'll get Dennis's take on these matters, The Divine Code by Rabbi Moshe Wiener, which is edited by Dr. Michael Schulman, which you can get online. In fact, they have on Facebook, they have a group for people who want to interact with, I think, Dr. Schulman. Rav Wiener makes videos. And basically, again, this is a basic core commandment to avoid worshiping anything aside from Creator. So it reads like this. A human being is forbidden to engage in all forms of idol worship. And he quotes there from Rambam, Laws of Kings, Chapter 9, Law 2. However, if a person transgresses and worships an idol, this does not constitute a capital sin that can be punished by a Torah-based court until he or she serves the idol in a manner that is customary for its followers, or if he or she performs one of the four special rituals reserved for divine service for God in the Holy Temple as it used to stand in Jerusalem. And this will be later explained in Topic 4. And that way, again, that's why we go back to an earlier point we made, Blessed Souls, is that we are not in any shape or form inciting anyone to destroy the property of another person or institution, because the way that institution, so to speak, pays homage to that statue or that piece of jewelry or that ornamentation is not necessarily the standard form of idolatry. Again, this leads into a lot of other discussions. What if that became, if there's a special service connected to it? I'm not here to deliver any decisions to you, blessed souls, but actually what I'm trying to do is to cause those of you who are not worshiping in this matter called idol worship to rejoice that you are not transgressing the will of the Creator. And we also must mention, blessed souls, you notice that if you know if you've learned a little history about Abraham, aside from destroying his father's idols in his father's idol shop, and Abraham was the first recognized activist for the promotion of one Creator, a monotheistic type of consciousness, we don't really read of any other place where Abraham was taking a sledgehammer and breaking the idols of the Egyptians when he went to Egypt, nor was he breaking the idols of the Canaanites where he lived, or of the Plishtim, the Philistines. So I'll turn to Dennis for some feedback, and then we're going to wrap down, we're going to be ending the show. Dennis?
There is no replacement for God. There is no metal object, idol, amulet, whatever you want to call it. There is no substitute for God. God is God. Any variation of that substitution is going against the intentions of God. It was repeated in the Ten Tablets that Moses brought down, and it's part of the contract with the Noahide and of the seven. So it's repeated over and over. The only thing that I always think is funny, whimsical, is that Moses had the original ten. But I guess by the time Noah came along, it was thought of that maybe we can't follow the ten. So they reduced it to seven, hoping that you would at least follow seven.
Well, Dennis, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, or maybe it's the bearer of good news, that Noah came before Moses. So it wouldn't have been that. It was actually an expansion of the seven.
I stand corrected. So it's nice that Moses made the correction.
I'm sorry? That Moses is what?
That Moses made the correction to incorporate the 7 and the 10.
Well, God, that was God. That wasn't Moses. That was God. Because Moses was a prophet. Moses was a loudspeaker for the Creator. He wasn't. He didn't mix in his own ideas.
The conduit.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
He didn't even replace God. Nothing replaces God.
No, that's true. That being said, blessed souls, nothing can replace the idea of peace, because peace is actually one of the names of Creator, which is brought out to fruition and testimony in the Tanakh, in the book of Judges. I think it's in chapter 6. I'll try to remember, with Hashem's help, to quote for you that verse next week. And with the umbrella of peace protecting us from all forms of disassociation with peace, we need to be friends. And that's why we're going to end our show today, blessed souls, with our flagship ending music from David Dohm, this composition we've played before, and we'll play it again. Let us be friends, because David Dohm helps us get back home to realize our Tzelem Elohim is no dream, our divine image helps us get off in scrimmage. And I can't leave the program today without reminding you, blessed souls, you've got to be good. I'm sure many of you who are listening right now are good, and you're going to become even much more good when you realize that Teva Teva Lehetiv is the nature of the good to do good, and is Creator, who is the source of all goodness, who gave you this nature. You just have to tap into the greatness of good. We all have to. Yes, we have struggles. Dennis has his struggles. I've done this. You're good, have my struggles with this. But we know that we're connected to the ultimate good, the ultimate divine good of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, Holy One, blessed be He. And therefore, we can let out with a sigh of relief that we know who is the commander-in-chief, the Creator. So until we, hopefully Dennis and I, and hopefully Ron Williams will join us, or even you, blessed souls, live. We'll have a special guest we didn't intend on having, because you never know what can happen when we do these shows, and hopefully it's in the positive. We're going to end off with Let Us Be Friends by David Dohm, and hopefully the conclusion of this show, as the beginning of this show, as the beginning is wedged in the end, and the end in the beginning, you should all conclude in a way of Ahava Chad, one love, Goral Chad, one destiny kolano for all of us, Bardachi Shalom, in a peaceful way, in a pleasant way, to be continued with the help of the Most High. Take care, everyone.